What did they give you? Thorazine? Haldol? How much? How much? Learn your drugs. Know your doses. It's elementary.
I need to make a telephone call.
Telephone call? A telephone call? That's communication with the outside world. Doctor's discretion. Hey, all of these nuts could just make phone calls. It could spread insanity oozing through telephone cables, oozing to the ears of all these poor, sane people, infecting them. Wackos everywhere, plague of madness.
We are the wretched refuse. We're underdogs. We're mutts. We're mutants. There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us. Something seriously wrong with us.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Archivist Projects, Project Archivist show. This is probably, God, this whole show has been insane. We interview Andrew Gable tonight about his book, The Mystery Animals of Pennsylvania. The interview is actually probably going to be cut a little short because of the immense amount of internet problems we have had behind the scenes. So, let's start off. You had to do a Windows update, which...
Oh, dude, no, don't even...
Was 15 hours.
Dude, it was crazy. I don't know what happened, but when it finally came back online, it said, you know, when you do the fresh install, it says hi on the screen. That's what it was doing. Like, it completely reinstalled Windows 10 on here.
That's strange in itself, and that took forever. So you had to scramble over to your kid's computer and use their computer.
Which is brand new, by the way. Brand new.
And then your microphone wasn't working properly. It would cut out. We would lose
and then
you.
The headphone would die.
Your headphones would stop working, which they're now working. So again, I think it's that computer. And then we would just lose you completely, or you would not be able to hear us. And I don't think during the interview with Andrew that Andrew was able to hear us properly at times, because the whole thing... The whole interview, it's like if you were to take his audio track and our audio track and we would ask a question and then it would be pause, pause, pause. And then Andrew would answer and then we'd go to answer to something else and he would still be, it was all screwed up. And then our website crashed on us this week. Okay, as I said, if anybody hadn't heard my little message about why the website crashed, we're going to be in the process of moving from who our current provider is. We're moving over to a different service, which is going to be much better. For you guys on your end, and Chuck from over at Wheel Nerds is kind of who steered me in the right direction to go this way. From what I understand, you guys are going to have to at some point or other unsubscribe for the podcast and resubscribe to the podcast, because... The thing that tells people, the thing that tells iTunes, here's a podcast, download it, and all the other podcast aggregators, once you move the thingy called the RSS feed, if you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. It's like the address for where the podcast is stored. Apparently, once you move it, it screws all that stuff up, and you have to unsubscribe and resubscribe. You people will know way ahead of time when that's going to happen. But long story short, we're going to be migrating from where we're at to a new web service provider within the next 3 months, hopefully as soon as humanly possible, because I want to get off where we're at now.
This plan is rickety as yoga balls, man.
What, the plan that I'm doing right now?
This whole thing is rickety as yoga balls.
Well, the move
especially with our past experience.
The move should be relatively simple, but I have to go over to where we're going and redesign the website for the most part. And it's more or less going to be a matter of... changing like where the domain name goes. Once the website's built, I'm going to put the website, the domain name is going to point to that site in the RSS. It's going to, hopefully it's going to be as quick as flipping a switch.
And hopefully.
Everybody will know that. Now, the downside is we may lose all of our back catalog.
Oh, good.
Shows it up on the website. So if you want to go to projectarchivist.com on the right side of the page where the archives are, go through and download as many of our old shows as you possibly can, you might want to do that because there's a whole lot on there.
Can't we save them on a thumb drive?
No, dude. There's like gigs and gigs again, gigs and gigs and gigs and gigs of stuff on there. That,
really?
I mean, I probably could. If you've got a big enough hard drive to dump them into, yeah, go right ahead. You can. I'm not sure if I want to spend hours at a time downloading all of that stuff. I probably could. Maybe. I don't know. But I kind of want to do somewhat of a fresh start when we make the jump. You know, I'll go back a few episodes, but I'm not going to go back from the very beginning. So, You know, I don't know if I want to save all that much stuff and port all that stuff over to the new site. That's part of the problem. It's not so much downloading, it's porting it over to the new site, downloading it, and then re-uploading it again to the new site. I don't know if I want to put all that up there. So what I'm thinking about doing is maybe for the Patreon people down the road or something like that, buying some thumb drives and, you know, for Patreon people, you know, maybe like here's all of our thumb drive with all of our old shows and stuff like that on it or whatnot. So I don't know. That's the one. That's the tricky part, is going to be the back catalog, is what we're going to do with that, or if we're going to save it, or if I'm just going to trash it all and start from scratch, you know, and slowly put it back up. I haven't decided yet, because that's going to be a lot of work. And as it is, migrating from one server to another server and getting the new website up and running and stuff like that is going to be, that's already going to be a big ton of work to get this pulled off. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, some podcasts like Wheel Nerds is fairly easy because their website isn't very extensive, but ours is. We've got a lot of stuff on it. So I'm thinking about just wiping it and starting it from scratch, you know, from whatever, you know, a couple episodes back from wherever we start from. But you guys are going to be hearing about all that in the coming, you know, coming months and what have not. But this is great. We've managed to make it 5 minutes without any kind of internet problem.
Yay! Dad, now you've just cursed us.
To set the counter is saying 17 minutes and 32 seconds, but we've only been recording for five. So anyhow, great. Let's do some news here or some weird stories just to move things along. We've got three of them here. We've got woman urinates worms for 3 months. We've got a Mexican cartel situation, which is crazy. Then we got a guy who stole the brain and got high in formaldehyde. Do you have the links in that order?
Yeah, of course okay. I do.
I'll start off with the woman who urinates worms for 3 months.
Woman pee-pee problems?
This is from www.opposingviews.com. I have no idea how
reputable.
That word. I don't know how much of
things.
That word is applying to this site, because this could be a complete bullshit joke. A South Carolina woman, right there proves it's a joke. But anyway, a South Carolina woman who had been urinating worms for the past 3 months was found to have an infection of fly larvae in her bladder.
I don't know how that can happen.
Let's just think about that for a moment.
How that could happen.
If she's urinating worms, she's literally urinating maggots. She's pissing maggots.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Let's try to read this and see where it takes us. The Daily Mail reports that an unidentified 50-year-old woman visited a hospital in South Carolina and complained of worms wriggling in her urine. She also said urination was extremely painful, I would think so, and that she was suffering from a pain in her side. Doctors ran tests which revealed multiple small dark larvae that appeared to clear the naked eye. Clear to the naked eye. I'm so stressed out from this show, folks. Further testing on the larvae revealed that they were not technically worms, but diptera flies? I'm not saying that. Diptera flies? Is that how it's pronounced? Wow, amazing. The more I drink, the better I can talk. Which
are
known to cause a condition called, I can't pronounce that word, miasis? Miasis?
Miasis.
Yeah. Miasis? Okay.
Miasis
hurts. According to the National Library of Medicine, miasis is a term used to describe the invasion of tissue or organs or of vertebrates with the larva maggots of diptereous flies. I want to know how these got there. Urinary miasis occurs when an individual drinks a water source that has been contaminated with fly eggs. The condition is normally only seen in developing countries or in people whose immune systems have been compromised, according to the Daily Mail. Doctors in South Carolina had never seen a case of urinary miasis in American citizens.
Jesus, man.
That's what she'll need, and they had to consult medical literature in order to treat the patient. After researching, they prescribed her with ivermectin. That sounds like the German word from
sure.
Her. Ivermectin, a drug used to treat parasites. The patient in question reportedly has no idea how she became infected, though she did recently relocate to Charleston, South Carolina from Mexico. There's your answer, where miasis is more common. After 1 week of treatment, the patient claims that she is now worm-free.
Well, that's good for her.
So why don't you take
She's got no more cooter worms.
Cooter worms.
Great.
Okay. Take us to the Daily Mail, where a Mexican hit woman claims she has sex with corpses after beheading them and drinking the blood of the dead.
A hit woman for one of Mexico's most notorious cartels has made a stunning confession from her California jail cell. She claims to have intercourse with beheaded corpses and drank their blood. Of course she did. Mexican media reported 28-year-old Juana, also known as Pica?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, well, no, not the same. Whatever. The ruthless Zetas cartel made the admissions from a Baja California prison. Juana said, "Ever since I was a little girl, I was a rebel, and then became a drug addict and an alcoholic." That's like saying I'm an alcoholic and alcoholic and... Never mind. Juana was born in Hidalgo near Mexico City. She became pregnant at 15 by a man 20 years her senior. Old balls. To support herself and her child, she worked as a prostitute until delving into the dangerous cartel world. Juana said she got her start as a halconia. I don't know what that is. A lookout for police. Oh, all right. A lookout for police and armed patrols, according to Central European News. Her job entailed standing at a lookout point for 8 hours at a time. So she had a good job. If she failed, Juana was said to be tied up and fed a single taco per day. That doesn't seem too bad. A taco a day?
One taco a day?
I don't know, man. It's better than starving to death.
I guess.
Dude, think about it.
The cartel weight loss program.
I have nothing or a taco. I'm going to go with taco. During her time working for the cartel, she bore witness to a host of gruesome moments, including a man's head being smashed open with a mace. All right. I remember feeling sad and thinking I didn't want to end up like that. Wow. Her aversion to blood did not last long, however.
Ooh, she's got cleavage.
She's something else.
I'm local breaking news my neck, site, turning my head sideways to look at the picture
dude,
of her.
Easy, easy. Local news site Denuncias claims Juana began to feel excited by it, rubbing myself in it and bathing in it after killing a victim. Wow. Denuncias said Juana insinuated at having had sex with cadavers of those decapitated, using a severed head as well as the rest of the body to pleasure herself.
Oh.
La Pica is still awaiting sentencing in California. Yeah, she's a cutie.
Yeah, she's very cute. She's got a cartel head on.
Of course, because who knows, dude? Everybody needs a cartel, dude. This smells like a made-up story.
She's cute. It is the Daily Mail, so who knows? I have a theory that about 70%, maybe 50% of what you read on the Daily Mail is probably bullshit. Like they just grab the slightest snidge of a story and will run with it. Sometimes
I'm gonna go with yes on that.
So I that's my guess. You know what? I'm gonna let you read the next one too, simply because you said something about you've actually
I've used formaldehyde.
Yeah. So
illy wet. I used to smoke the shit.
Oh my god.
Not like this though. I'm pretty sure there were no brains in them at the time.
What was his name? Abby something.
I know there was no
Abby
brains
Noble?
In my skull. Abby Normal.
You got an abnormal brain?
You gave me an abnormal brain.
Rest in peace,
I Gene.
Gene. I
Wilder
toast you.
Already.
I'm yeah. toasting
you
Gene
get
right
nothing,
now.
Sir.
Good day, sir. All right, read this one.
Police say man stole human brain, used formaldehyde to get high. Carlisle, PA. A central Pennsylvania man is accused of spraying fluid used to embalm a human brain on marijuana that he then smoked. And it's called illy or wet, just for side note.
What? Wait a minute.
That's
what
it's called.
It's called smoking formaldehyde. It's called illy?
It's called illy or wet.
So what do you do? Smoke, like, soak a joint in formaldehyde?
Yep. And then you burn it.
What is it? Read this. Just read the story. I'm imagining it's going to describe
Carlisle on Thursday charged Joshua Lee Long, 26, with abuse of a corpse and conspiracy. WGAL-TV says court records indicate Long's aunt discovered the brain in a department store bag while cleaning out a trailer. Oh, of course he lives in a trailer. Long allegedly told her during a phone conversation from the Cumberland County Jail that he used a formaldehyde-soaked pot to get high. Court records indicate a coroner concluded the brain was real and that Long supposedly named it Freddy. According to the arrest affidavit, the coroners who examined the brain believe it is most likely a stolen medical specimen.
Most likely?
Long remains in jail and court records don't list a lawyer for him.
He doesn't look like too bad of a guy. You know, he's compared to some of the people you would expect to see in the mugshot.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so smoking formaldehyde, what kind of a high do you get off of that?
A good one.
What I mean is it's obviously not a weed high, so...
Sort of. A little stronger than that. They call it, you know... It's not, I wouldn't suggest it.
If I said what my new guilty pleasure is lately, obviously not smoking formaldehyde. I've got,
I was going to say, dude, are you going to fucking tie that into something? Because no, you better think pretty quick.
No, I've gotten really hooked on watching videos of people on Flocka. I'm a horrible person. I may have already said this on the show. I don't remember if I have or not. But I've really gotten into watching videos of people high on Flocka. You know, it's bad. I know. I'm a terrible person. I really am. But people do the craziest stuff on Flocka. You know?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Like these, like the kid that ate the guy's face off, you know? So anyways. Yeah,
they've done some weird shit. Flocka is no, dude, don't fuck with Flocka.
What happened ever happened to Crocodile? Did Crocodile finally fade out of...
No, they're still, they still apparently have issues with
how
it.
How can people still be using Crocodile? Because that stuff literally destroys you. I mean, do you just get to a point where you get so high on drugs that you don't care where your next fix comes from? Is that, is it that, is that
how? Pretty much. Well, you're chasing after it. There's a reason why they call it chasing the dragon, man.
Yeah, because you get high the one time and you want a high that's as good as the first high that you
got.
Yeah,
and it never happens.
Yeah. But Flocka literally destroys you, like almost immediately. So, I mean, not what, Flocka,
crocodile?
But Crocodile.
Yeah, crocodile will kill you. That's, it's meant to kill you.
That's kind of bad for business, though, isn't it? You're like,
well, no, not really. If you get enough morons.
Yeah, but you have a depleting customer base, you know?
Nah, you'd think you would. You really think that's how it happens.
You'd think that, but no, it's not. No, it doesn't work that way. All right, let's move into our interview with Andrew here. This is probably one of the weirdest interviews we've ever done because of all of the crazy audio issues that we're having in the background. You're going to hear... I don't know if I'm gonna try to edit it out, but there's parts in here where it sounds like you're like having a luchadore match with your microphone stand or whatever the hell it is.
Yep.
You're just like banging away on your microphones.
Like you're having a luchadore match.
It sounds at points like we're just destroying our keyboards. I don't know if Andrew could hear us properly because there's points where, which I'm gonna edit the pauses out. Because there's like long pauses. We'll ask him a question and there'll be really long pauses and then he'll answer. And then he'll kind of trail off in his answer, and I don't know if it very well could be because audio quality on our end was just insane. And we're like, we try, it's like we know the plane is crashing, and we're doing the best we can to not inform the passengers that we're going to die.
I'm all for it. Bring it.
That's kind of how it's all going down. So during this interview, there's definitely long pauses when Andrew talks. And I don't know if it's because he couldn't hear us or what the deal was. I fully expect it's because we are having every conceivable issue possible with podcasting right when this interview was going on. Everything that you could imagine was happening. Calls were dropping out. Your headphones were not working.
Dude, it's just bullshit.
It was crazy. There were times where I was hearing Andrew talk, like double talk. He'd say something and I'd hear it twice in a row. So I don't know what the deal is. I'm going to try as best as I can to edit a decent, coherent interview out of this. I'm sorry. But Andrew's book really is a good book. Even if you didn't like the interview or whatever, do try to check out his book because there's a lot of really cool folklore and legends and stuff in here, that stuff that I'd never heard of. I was really surprised by how big it is and the stuff that's in here. Because usually when you hear... Like, everyone hears Pennsylvania monsters, you go, oh, right to Bigfoot, you know, because that's where a majority, like, that's where a lot of Bigfoot sightings and stuff occur. And there's all kinds of craziness in here. Giant pigs, there was Jersey Devil sightings, I guess a whole lot of Jersey Devil sightings, which we kind of touch on. All of the stuff we try to touch on here, but due to the... Like, I kind of just want to run the Benny Hill music on loop in the background behind this.
Yakety sax.
Yeah, you know, or like the Scooby-Doo music where they're chasing the ghost around and going through doors and stuff like that. This is one of the weirdest interviews we've ever done, and it's purely for technical reasons. So we'll see you guys at the other side.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody, I need to drop this here before this interview gets started. There's a point in this interview where we talk about a book called The Long Lost Friend, and we talk a little bit about Pennsylvania Dutch hex magic. If you guys aren't familiar with what that is, way back in episode number 68, we interviewed an author about a reprint of the Long Lost Friend book, and we go into what Pennsylvania Dutch hex magic is and some of the background and the history of all of that. You can find it in the show archives on the right side of projectarchivist.com, or you can go up in the top and just type in Daniel Harms, H-A-R-M-S, and you'll be able to find one of those interviews, and go ahead and give it a listen if you want to. I highly recommend it. It was a great show. But back into this. So tonight we have with us Andrew Gable with his book, The Mystery Animals of Pennsylvania, which is basically a huge book full of cryptological stuff from Pennsylvania. And it's kind of funny, like, because we ran into you. I think you started following the show or something like that for a while. So you're part of the you're kind of part of our little loop of people that listen to the show. And I think you're on our Facebook page. But I remember you posted something like, the cryptological community can kiss my ass because I've got a couple of books on cryptozoology. And we're like, hello.
Didn't know.
Yeah, we had no idea. So you sent us out the book. We read it. And I was pretty much blown away by the amount of information you have in here. I had no idea that Pennsylvania had so many weird creatures in there. I expected the Indian folklore, which you do have a good amount of Native American folklore in here. But there was all kinds of other stuff in there. Because generally, when I think Pennsylvania, I think Bigfoot. And that's pretty much it. How did you get involved with all this cryptozoological stuff?
This specific Pennsylvania stuff, I mean?
Yeah.
That was actually, believe the section actually on the Jersey Devil was actually the first section in it I wrote. I was actually just writing that as an article by itself, and while I was looking around through old newspapers and getting the different Jersey Devil sightings and that, I realized there was enough other stuff that I was turning up that I was just like, okay, well, I may as well just write a whole book just collecting all this stuff and that. The Thunderbirds, too, where I went to college, that was pretty much like right in the middle of where they were seeing them all. So,
From Pennsylvania?
That was, yes. Yeah.
So basically, you were just researching everything that was going on in your state then, for the most part.
Pretty much, yeah.
I was pretty freaked out, or I should say I wasn't so much freaked out, but I had no idea that the Jersey Devil was having sightings in Pennsylvania. Like, to the point that people were closing down schools and stuff like that, and putting up signs saying the Jersey Devil is a hoax. You know, were people really flipping out that bad about it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
See, I know that freaked you out. What freaked me out is in 2002, they found a bitterong underneath someone's porch, like an actual animal that ain't supposed to be there. That freaked me out more than the Jersey Devil sighting.
That would kind of freak me out, too.
You're wandering around your yard and you think it might be a raccoon, and then that, something that's supposed to be in, you know, on the other side of the planet, is wandering around in your yard.
Yeah. I mean, that did turn out that was, I think, Somebody owned one who wasn't supposed to and sold it off, and
then they let it go.
Somehow it ended up wandering around.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
How many Jersey Devil sightings were there?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know if anybody's ever actually...
I mean, was there like a decent amount of them, or, you know, when did they start?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The very first sightings, I think there was people seeing it back in the early 1800s once in a while, and it really picked up in, like, in 1909, it picked way up, and that's when, you know, most of the ones in that section are from. And then, pretty much since then, it's just been, like, pretty constant.
So they're still happening?
I don't know if anybody, as far as I know, I don't know if anyone's ever actually counted how many of them there are, but I wouldn't doubt there's probably at least, like, 200 of them, probably.
Are they happening, like, deep within the state, or more or less just along the borders of New Jersey?
Actually, I don't know how many of them we have in Pennsylvania anymore. I was talking with New Jersey, too. But, yeah, I don't know if there's any too many horribly reported from Pennsylvania anymore. There's some kind of weird things over toward the border with New Jersey that I guess could be something along those lines. But not that they're actually called the Jersey Devil, but, you know, somebody will see, like, a panther that has, like, wings or something. And it's like, well, that's kind of Jersey Devil-ish, I guess.
So wait a minute.
Well, back in 2010, November of 2010, somebody reported seeing one.
So there were the panther with the wings, or the Jersey Devil?
The panther with the wings, which I'm assuming that they're associating that as a Jersey Devil. It's had so many iterations. I mean, the story of Mother Leeds compared to what has been written down over time is two totally different stories. So there's been many iterations of what the Jersey Devil looks like. They finally, like, settled on one that you know, the one we see on books and T-shirts and stuff now. But there have been many iterations of what the Jersey Devil supposedly looks like outside of the cloven hooves.
Yeah, yeah. I get the feeling, I get the idea overall that eventually it just became like anything weird you can't explain in that area is the Jersey Devil. Like, whether it is actually the Jersey Devil or not. Because you get people say, you know, they'll see a Bigfoot and they'll say that's the Jersey Devil. They see mountain lions and they'll say that's the Jersey Devil. They'll see a kangaroo and they'll say that's the Jersey Devil. And I mean, like the one I had in the book, they'll see an octopus and they say that's the Jersey Devil.
Well, you know,
and it's, well, obviously all these freaking things aren't the Jersey Devil.
That's a good catch-all, though.
All things being equal.
Let me ask you this then. What the hell is the Ape Boy? Is this like the West Virginia Bat Child from Weekly World News? Or...
Oh, my God.
So supposedly the story is actually kind of similar to the Jersey Devil, actually. Supposedly there was a kid that was like deformed or something, and he basically got forced out of town because nobody wanted to deal with him, which, you know, that shows what early 1700s was like, I guess. You know, oh, this guy's deformed. Let's throw him out of town because nobody wants to freaking talk to him.
It's not much today.
It's the same today.
And then he just went out and was just living in the swamps and supposedly somehow over time turned into this Bigfootish type thing. And I don't really understand how the heck that happens. You know, just because you're living by yourself for a while, you're going to eventually turn into Bigfoot, I guess. I don't know. But yeah.
When was it first sighted?
And
I mean, like, what was it? Just this creature that just hung out in the woods and just annoyed people, or?
Yeah, I think most of the time the Ape Boy is just like a legend. But, I mean, there have been sightings of, like, ape-type things down that way once in a while. And, I mean, I always kind of wondered maybe this is what they were basing that story on. And the earliest one of those I have, I think, is from, like, the early
1900s. 1919.
Actually, you got one in here from 1906. Yeah. The legend of the Ape Boy seems to remain just that until early years of the 20th century. In November of 1906, some wild and uncanny thing resembling a gorilla was prowling around Morton and Springfield Township. This beast, though, had an unusual attribute or habit. It appeared only to blacks. So it appeared only to black people?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, actually. You do get when you find these old sightings of ghosts and things, you actually do find that attribute like a lot that they mention, that it only appears to black people.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I hear something like that, I'm just kind of you know, like, is that really what was going on? Because it always just puts it in the back of my head that is there like some sort of like racial clan type thing going on here, because that sort of thing's happened with them in the past, that they've made up like a ghost type story to basically harass people and keep them in their houses at night and not roaming around. And so that always kind of made me wonder with that particular sighting if something along those lines might have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe that's why who would appear to more.
Oh God, Lobo, did you just destroy your microphone?
I hope not. No.
You sound like you're fighting a monster in your basement. Okay, so the next one I was going to ask you about was the Skin Man, because this is just such a bizarre legend. I've never heard of this one before.
It really is weird.
What is the legend of the Skin Man?
Honestly, the book that I read it in didn't really have a whole lot of information on it, like pretty much beyond what I said there, which is basically just that there's supposedly like this just like inflated bag of skin, basically, it sounded like, just like would hang out of a tree. It was really bizarre, even for a mythological picture. That was like,
so what would it
really
do?
Just... really odd.
Is this a bag of skin that would hang on a tree and like try to attack people, or?
I don't really know. That's the thing. It never really went too far into it. I guess it would like kind of get, try to get people or something? Because otherwise, I don't know really why you would have that as a mythical creature. I mean, you had to interact with people in some way.
Bag of skin. Sounds like a Friday night.
There's a lot of people that description could probably describe. But
yes.
Well, you've got a ton of, like, what other Indian folklore legends you got in here that you recall off the top of your head that were the weirdest ones for you?
The one that I really don't know 100% that it's some Indian thing, but I'm assuming it probably is. There's a ghost type thing in up around Scranton called the Bogunk or Bogunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming it's probably based on, because a lot of the Indians did have, like the Pogut, which or Baycock, sometimes you hear it. It's like this skeleton-type dude that supposedly hunts hunters in the woods and stuff and tracks hunters down and kills them at night and eats their livers. And I'm...
With some Chianti and some fava beans?
Yes.
Well, you know.
You know, it's a Hannibal Lecter skeleton.
What about the ghost?
It always struck me as kind of like the sort of, I don't know why, it always seems sort of along the lines of like a Wendigo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a Wendigo.
There is some Wendigo stories in Pennsylvania. I mean, they don't actually call it the Wendigo, but they call it the Muwa or something, but you can pretty clearly tell that's what it is.
That's another definition. That name is another term for a Wendigo. Different tribes use different terms.
The odd thing here that I never heard with Wendigo stories anyway is that these ones, you were like supposed to be able to get better from it.
Yeah.
Wait,
like,
what?
If you would...
You wouldn't... You
meet somebody,
didn't
become, you meet
go ahead,
someone
Andrew.
And you become the Wendigo, and then they're supposed to be able to do like some ritual or something, and you can turn back into a person.
Yeah, there was salvation as opposed to the Wendigos of the greater north, the great white north.
Yeah,
he was dead, but he's only mostly dead.
Picture like that part in Monty Python. I got better.
Yeah.
Turned me into a newt. All right, so we've covered hex magic before on this show a couple of times with the long-lost friend, powwow magic and so forth. Now, you've got a section mm-hmm. here 1923 about a guy named John Blymeyer.
As far as I know, that's how you pronounce the name. He was supposed to be one of these hexers, and he claimed that eventually he just, like, his magic stopped working, and he couldn't use his magic anymore, and he started having all these weird, like, visions and stuff. Like, he would always talk about how, like, in his apartment, he could see, like, witches and goblins climbing up his walls and stuff like that. And, well, he eventually, his wife put him in an insane asylum, obviously, because the guy doesn't sound like he was altogether there.
No.
And at some point, he either escaped or walked out. The kind of stories, I've heard both. And he had this, how do I say it? He was, like, convinced that somebody had put a curse on him, and that's why his magic just stopped working. So he was going around to all these other different hexers and, like, trying to find out who put the curse on him. And finally he went to one in Marietta, which is only a couple miles north of where I'm from. And she did this thing and was like, he's supposed to have a dollar bill in his hand and stare at it or something, and then she takes it, and then he's supposed to see the face of who put a curse on him on his hand. Now, I mean, something to me tells me that's probably just simple, like, illusion. You know, you stare at something long enough, and it, like, gets imprinted kind of on your eye or whatever, and then you remove that, and you just see, like, the after image of it. That's probably all it was, but he claimed he saw this specific guy's face, and he went over to York County then and gathered up two other people who he also said were cursed by the same guy, and then Nelson Raymeyer, that's who he was convinced had a curse on him. And he and these other two guys went there to get his copy of The Long Lost Friend, and they had to burn it because that was going to lift the curse on them. Well, when they got there, the other two guys basically pussied out and decided, oh, well, we don't want to go down to his basement and try to get this book from him. So,
wow. Way to go.
So they came back the next night with like a bunch of rope and tied this guy up, and we're going to take the book. And at some point, this is where a lot of the comes into question what exactly happened here. Somebody, one of the three, had the idea, let's kill this guy. And that'll just lift the curse. And then we don't even need to bother with any of this other shit. Let's just kill him. And so they did and tried to burn his house down. And that became a very, 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 very big murder trial in New York. Because that, I mean, well, that was like the most major thing that happened for a while. And it was just, I don't know, just so bizarre because it was like these three guys murdered this other guy because they thought he was a witch. Long story short, it ended up they didn't burn his house down. So how you exactly try to burn down wooden house and don't do it, I don't know. But
maybe some, drank at some point the fire out.
Yeah, it's and people come up with all sorts of explanations as to how the fire went out, that it was something really disgusting with like the urine in his body and it ruptured and put out the fire or something weird like that. And I'm like, yeah. I think it's probably more likely they probably just didn't know what they were doing. Yeah, that was a very, very big murder trial because it was so strange and bizarre, I think. And that ended up with starting a whole like hysteria going across the nation, actually, with, you know, putting these hex people on trial. And because most of them were in Pennsylvania. There were a few outside of Pennsylvania that I found. There's a decent bit in Ohio. I think there's a couple in Chicago. But yeah, it was this whole kind of hysteria tracking these people down and, they're, you know, gonna cause people to kill people and all this.
So it was like
stuff.
The witch trials then for the most part or not? Because I've never heard of hex magic people being chased down and put on trial or anything. This is a new one for me. I was always under the impression that either people believed in them or people didn't, but they were never looked at as evil or anything, because most of hex magic for the most part is prayers or just something that sounds like a prayer or something like that, because they're getting their magic from a holy source or something along those lines. So I've always wondered if like they were looked at as like witches or, you know, tried like witchcraft or something like that. Or are they more just being tried like as shysters or something along those lines?
Yeah, that was more of that. They were just tracking them down as like, you know, these people are trying to heal people and causing these people to end up dying instead of, because they, you know, somebody would decide, hey, I'd rather go, you know, talk to my hexer than go to a hospital. And then he'll prescribe something and it ends up not working. And so, So they more track them down as like con men rather than anything else.
Yeah. Well, people back then didn't have the money. So they a lot of people couldn't afford doctors and stuff. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If somebody would come along and say, yeah, you know, I do powwow magic or whatever, you know, just give me some food or something like that, or give me a place to stay tonight or something along those lines. People not having any money and, you know, using whatever they had, that would usually be what they would go with because they couldn't afford to get a doctor, or sometimes didn't even have doctors for the most part. You know, the closest doctor would be like 2 days away by wagon or something, you know, and if somebody's got the flu or they're dying or a pneumonia or something like that, or you don't know what's going on, or even if your cows are, you know, or dying or something like that, then that would be why they would call those people in sometimes.
I did think it was interesting that back when the Raymeyer murder happened, that when they were leaving, and all three of them in the court transcripts, all three of them confirmed this, that there was supposedly, when they left the house, there was somebody standing in the road right outside the house. Now, all three of them also do say it was apparently Blymeyer was the one that first said something about seeing this. Basically, all three of them confirm it. Blymeyer said he saw it, and the other two basically say Blymeyer said he saw it. So, was there or was there not? I don't know. It's kind of interesting because there's like ghost sightings over there of people standing in the road. So that in that way, it's kind of interesting. But like I said, Blymeyer really seems like he wasn't altogether there in the head anyway. So,
well, how much of this stuff that you've written about in the book, you know, are you a skeptic by nature, or how much of this stuff do you think actually happened?
Well, I'm pretty skeptical of a lot of stuff. I more approach a lot of this stuff as, like, unless you know it happened. Like, when I had the things in there when they caught alligators and stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to start asking you about this.
Because you can actually see the alligator, so you know they did catch that. But I view most of this stuff really as probably more along the lines of what folklore more than anything. Like, I do, you know, obviously know there is people that do believe this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know, that's kind of what's more interesting to me, honestly, is why there's so many people that believe this.
So what's up with the alligators? They actually caught a live alligator?
They caught more than one.
They've actually caught a lot of alligators.
How do they survive through the water? Or are they just, I mean, I could see modern times because people are stupid. They get pets, they can't take care of it, and they let it go. But this happened a while ago, didn't it?
Oh, five,
some of them
six,
happened a while
nine.
Ago. Yeah, some of them happened really very recently.
Do they get a pretty good size?
1942, 1953. Mm-hmm. Decent size,
yeah. The biggest one I can remember is the one they caught in Allentown, I believe it was. That was like 5 or 6 feet, I think.
Yeah, it was a good, decent size.
Pretty,
I think it was 5 feet.
Size.
How do they survive through the winter? Because Pennsylvania is not exactly a late winter state. Like, you guys get snow.
Well, there's ones out near Pittsburgh. They catch a lot near the hydroelectric plant out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe the water, might just stay warmer than the surrounding water would. So that might be why they tend to hang out
there. That doesn't freeze. That water stays really warm out of the hydroelectric plant.
Yeah, we've got a spot like up here in Lake Erie where the our Fermi 2 nuclear power plant is. Just off of Fermi, and then down from there a little bit further, there's another one. I believe it's a coal-burning power plant. And there's also sections of Lake Erie down that way that don't freeze up in the wintertime. And you'll see people out there all winter long fishing. Like, it'll be the dead of winter, and there'll be people out there fishing on the water in their boats, because that whole canal and that whole section of the lake right there just doesn't freeze up. I guess it stays warm year-round, which is really weird, like looking out over the lake and just seeing like a lake of steam rising. It's bizarre.
Well, it's the same thing with some of the Finger Lakes. I know one Finger Lake in particular up in New York that you can see the Canadian power plant from.
Yeah.
And that's really eerie to go up there when it's cold and it's not frozen.
Yeah, but even still, gators can survive. And, I mean, that's still not warm enough water for gators. Well, I guess they could. I mean,
yeah, once they get to a certain temperature, they go into what's called a torpor, and it's like hibernation for them. So, I mean, it's not outside of the realm of possibility, but for them to catch ones that large, that's something.
All right, so you've got a thing in here, 1879, the Goatman sightings. Now, the only Goatman sightings that I'm aware of, I know there's some in Ohio, and I know there's a whole bunch down in Texas, but I've never heard of Pennsylvania Goatman sightings. So what's up with these?
Oh, okay, I know which one you're talking about, I think.
Yeah,
the,
page 179.
The one in Berks County?
I can't pronounce
good
it.
Good luck with that.
Roscoe Manor Township?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you got a couple of them. You got one in Big Valley, Lancaster. You've got them.
The Big Valley one, anyway, I was actually talking to Chad Arment. Do you know who I mean?
Who?
Okay, he's written a couple books with basically going through old newspaper articles, too. And I was talking to him about it. And he said that, well, because there is nowhere in Lancaster County actually called Big Valley. So I always did wonder what the heck they were talking about with that sighting. And he said, which I thought was actually a pretty interesting idea, was that there is in Mifflin County, there's a place called Big Valley, which in the area was settled by a bunch of Amish people emigrating from Lancaster County. So he's wondering if somebody read about some sighting that happened up there and just saw, like, you know, Amish and basically assumed Lancaster, but maybe it actually happened in this one. But yeah, there was supposedly, from what it sounded like with that one, it was basically like a Bigfoot, but he supposedly had like ram horns and it was like eating dead geese and supposedly ate, some guy attacked it with a scythe and it took it from him and like ate it.
What? It ate his scythe?
Like, okay. Why it would eat a scythe, I don't know.
One more, man.
I hope it eats the wood part of it, or at least.
That doesn't even make any sense. I can't even visualize that. Like, I don't...
That's something.
Yeah, just
deep throat it and swallow it, or what?
I don't know. It's really weird. But the other one was in Berks County, where there was a, I don't remember exactly how this fighting happened. I think somebody saw this thing was laying down in a field, I think. It was a little yellow man.
What?
It was about, I think it was only supposed to be like 3 or 4 feet tall. It wasn't real huge. And it had these like little horns on it. I honestly can't remember too much off the top of my head about the sighting, but.
Was it in a ditch or something, or just?
It didn't sound like it was in a ditch. I think it was just like laying in the field, like kind of hiding in the grass, basically.
Interesting.
Hiding in the tall grass, pretty much.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit here. Chapter 10 is on water monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's some, most people think of water monsters, and you, by all means, do cover quite a few. Raystown Ray and whatnot. But I think just the fact that there are, we did touch on the alligators that have been caught. But these invasive or indigenous species of fish I find interesting that have been caught, not just claimed to have been caught, but actually caught. And there's photographs and fish and wildlife information. How many different, yeah. I mean, how far did you have to go into records and like newspaper articles to be able to grab these?
Oh, I mean, well, the snakeheads, that's pretty easy to find that information.
Right.
The flathead catfish. Well, that's because that's right by where I'm from. So okay. That was pretty easy to come by too. I'm trying to think what other ones there are.
Well, there's pakus. There's.
There, you kind of have to dig. You had to dig around a little bit for that, but that wasn't too hard to come by. Because there is like specific areas where they tend to catch a lot of them. I always heard there's the Conestoga goes not far from my house, and they always said about they catch piranhas in there. Kind of whenever people talk about piranhas, that's kind of where my head starts going, is them anyway, because it's probably more common that you're going to catch them, and they obviously look a heck of a freaking lot like a piranha.
Yeah, they're in the same family.
Yeah, if you don't see the teeth, you're going to think that's what it is. And there's this one particular area in the Conestoga where they routinely catch these all the time, so that's telling me probably somebody left them out there once upon a time, and just for whatever reason, they never died off there. But
well, if they're freshwater piranha, they probably could.
There's only freshwater piranha. There's no such thing as saltwater.
Yeah, but even still, the problem again comes down to wintertime and if they'd be able to survive in that cold climate. But if the water is warm enough, then yeah, they'd be fine. But
well, they've had, what was it on Monster Quest? They were doing a test on the temperatures that are viable for red belly piranha. And I believe they got down below or right around the 50 degree mark. And while they were sluggish, they were still alive. So if you were in an area where the water level, you know, the deeper you go, it gets out to a point where it's not going to get any colder in freshwater because you can't go down too deep, where it is viable and feasible for them to be able to survive and winter it out. As long as they're in an area where it's not going to freeze up.
Yeah.
I mean, for them to be able to catch fish that are, you know, over a foot long or right around a foot long, they have to have something in the way of abilities to be able to stay there.
The flathead catfish in the Susquehanna, the Fish and Game, they actually tell you, if you catch one, don't put it back. They actually tell you to, like, just exterminate them pretty much. Because they're not supposed to be there. They're eating everything else in the freaking river. The river's starting to not do very good at all. Now, that isn't all because of the catfish. Some of it's because of pollution, too. But the catfish certainly probably play a part in it. Because, I mean, they're eating everything in the river. And, like I said, they tell you, if you catch one, don't put it back in the river. And they get really big, too.
The shovel nose or flathead? The flathead cats?
Yeah.
Those, we've had some in fish tanks, and they've taken over the fish tanks.
Yeah, they get really big.
Well, I'm going to ask you about a couple of more things, and then we're going to let you go. You've got
cover the pigs.
The what?
The pigs.
The pigs? What about the pig? What pigs?
Oh, my God. Huge pigs. Like, fucking gigantic pigs. Like, making Hogzilla look like a twerp.
Yeah, but there's the Mold Man of Pittsburgh, and he's also got the Spectral Stickmen. So, what's cooler, Mold Man?
Cover those first.
Yeah, what's bigger, giant pigs or Mold Men?
Well, again, if it's six of one, half dozen the other, the Mold Man story is really cool. We should cover that. But, I mean, pigs, those are real, man, and that's bacon.
Yeah, they were pretty big. Yeah, we have, well, I mean, as most states do anymore, honestly, we have a huge freaking problem with feral pigs.
We've got a problem with those in downtown Detroit, believe it or not.
They're everywhere, man.
They don't talk about. Yeah, they don't talk about. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's such a crazy story. I've got to before it slips my mind. I guess down at the meat processing plant in Detroit, and I've seen it covered by different people, but it's one of those things that like the major sources of news don't want to cover. I don't know if it's because of conspiracy or whatever it is, but apparently when they're taking the pigs to downtown Detroit to get processed in the meat plants and stuff down there, every once in a while, one of or two of them will get away. And what happens is those pigs eventually become feral. I guess what's it? Correct me if I'm wrong, Lobo. I think an unsupervised pig can become feral in one generation. Is that what it is?
It's quicker than that, man. They turn faster than cats.
Yeah. So there's like a problem with wild boar and giant big like feral pigs in Detroit, of all things. It's crazy. Like there's like reports of them like eating people's dogs and cats and stuff like that. There's even reports of people being attacked by feral pigs. I don't know how prevalent the problem is now, but a few years ago, I guess it was like, yeah, there's a lot of people like, you know, they're like roaming packs of dogs or whatever. There's just wild feral pigs running around downtown Detroit and some of the more ghetto neighborhoods. But that always blew my mind. I'm like, you expect to hear about that out in the woods or something like that, but
they don't care, man.
Yeah, they can survive on anything. They can survive on garbage or scraps or whatever, you know, they'll eat whatever they can get their hands on. So I guess so, sure. You know, it just blew my mind that there was a problem with wild feral boar pigs in downtown Detroit. You don't hear about it too often, but there is a problem with it down there, apparently.
They're everywhere, man. Yeah. They're literally everywhere. But for them to get this size, I mean, that's the amazing thing. I mean, you go full size. If a boar is allowed to go on its own, within a couple of generations, it goes back to razorback with tusks and just nasty. The plates on the front, the skin on the front of the body starts to harden up. They turn into monsters. They literally turn back into monsters, what a wild boar would be. But you expect them to be, you know, range between 500 and 800 pounds. These suckers are, you know, over 1,200 pounds that he has written down in here. That's impressive. I mean, Hogzilla was weighed a grand. And these things are, the one from the 1800s, I think, was? The one that was recorded was 16 and change? It's almost a ton, man, for a pig.
Yeah, that's big. Yeah, I saw that one. I'm like, that's even for a pig, that's freaking massive.
Yeah, dude, that's gigantic.
Yeah. yeah, there was a one I had from the 1800s where, I believe, down in Delaware County, I think it was, there was one, just a regular farm pig that got out. And basically, to go with, like, what you guys were saying about how quickly they go feral, like, they had to send guys out to actually hunt this thing down because it went back to, like, boar state pretty much and was basically raising all sorts of hell down there, and they had to send guys out to hunt this thing down and everything.
Tell me about the Mold Men.
Okay. It was, I can't really tell if it's just a ghost story. I don't think it was like, it wasn't something that was like actually reported like over and over again. It was just like kind of a one and done thing. Supposedly there was a cemetery and there was this one skeleton. They were moving the cemetery or something. Not sure what it was, but they were exhuming bodies, so they were probably moving it. And there was supposedly this one skeleton that had some sort of mold on it. And then the story goes that supposedly this thing would, like, get up at night and go after people. And I think it might have actually killed somebody. I forget. I believe it did. But this skeleton was supposed to get up and walk around. I don't know if it's like some sort of Dungeons & Dragons monster mold that like regenerates the body or something.
Bizarre.
Yeah, they were moving. They had a mausoleum, a new mausoleum, and they were exhuming bodies and moving them into there.
Okay, so what about the spectral skeleton men? Or the spectral stickmen, yes.
Okay, this was right by where the town that I'm from.
Sounds like a wraith,
man. They sounded like they were sort of like a Bigfoot type thing by like the actual physical description of it. But they were only like 4 to 5 feet tall, and they were like really thin. They were really thin. And they were just like standing in the middle of the road, and then it would just vanish. And well, the thing is, where this guy saw that, they found a few other stories of people who saw around the same place, saw this thin, Bigfootish type thing with yellow eyes that would stand there and like stare at you for a while, and then it would just vanish.
Have you ever seen anything? What's the strangest thing you've ever seen, be it paranormal or natural?
Only thing I can think of, I might have seen a UFO one time. Maybe. I don't know. Because I can remember how we were in the car one night, and I saw what I thought was like a moon back here. It was like this, you know, like an orange moon when you have the harvest moon or whatever, when it turns orange. And then I saw, oh, the moon's here in front of the car. So that's not the moon back there. So, I mean, I don't know. I have no way to say that was a UFO or not. But and I guess sometimes at my parents' house, I thought I saw something on the stairs a few times. Like some little thing running up and down the stairs. But that's really about it.
All right. Well, tell everybody where they can get your book at. This is your chance to pimp all your stuff
on Amazon. It is on Amazon.
You got a website for any of your stuff as well?
No, I don't.
Just Amazon? How many books do you got out?
Just the one right now.
You working on
more? I have some stuff, other stuff I'm working on, yeah. Right now I'm researching one on when people, you know, when people act like ghosts, it isn't really that so big anymore.
Are you talking it about people who really use big. Flocka or...
No, back in the, was especially big, like back in the Victorian times, people would act like ghosts and run around town at night and stuff and basically just scare the shit out of people.
It's a good way to get shot now.
Which is...
No, people now just dress like clowns.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's kind of why I'm very interested in following this whole thing that's going on with these clowns.
Somebody's going to get killed. Yeah. Somebody is going to get killed.
And when it happens, you're going to have people walking around with signs saying clown lives matter.
Oh, for Christ.
I was always amazed by that with, you know, as many people as you have running around dressed up like clowns or whatever, or when you have a guy who puts, I'm going to put on a gorilla suit and pretend to be Bigfoot, and it's like, I can't believe you haven't had people end up getting shot and stuff by this.
Yeah,
as many people as there are who are like, you know, we see something we don't know what it is, let's shoot it.
Yeah.
This bang, is, stop, yep, or I'll shoot.
True.
All right, we're going to let you go, Andrew. We've had you on here for about an hour now. So, yeah, people can find your book on Amazon. It's called The Mystery Animals of Pennsylvania, written by Andrew Gable. Mm-hmm. I'll have a link to it in our show notes. And thanks for coming on here and talking about your book, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Want to get in contact with the show or listen to back episodes? It's easy. Go to www.projectarchivist.com. On the right side of the page, you'll find links to our archives, as well as links on how to get onto our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. If you want to leave a voicemail for us, it's 734-681-0459. Yes, we do listen to all of them. Or if you want to talk to Lobo directly, you can call 203-212-9975. Yes, that will in fact put you in touch with his cell phone. If he's available, he will take your call and talk to you. If you're just looking to send us an email, you can do that at projectarchivist@gmail.com. Don't forget to look for us on iTunes under the podcast section, or you can stream us right to your phone with the Stitcher Android app for free.
What? the hell do you think you're doing? Dragging your butt through the day, selling body and soul to a bunch of bland normals? Acting stupid so they'll think you're one of them? Tired of getting all of the guilt, but none of the sex? There is a simple answer, dear friend. A glowing beacon of slack amidst the turmoil and darkness. It's J.R. Bob Dobbs, the living slack master and his Church of the Subgenius. Bob brings a new destiny for the abnormal. For Bob comes to justify our sins, to unmask the conspiracy, and to get us back the slack they stole away. It's us versus them. Are you gonna fry in hell on earth alongside the pink boys? Or will you pull the wool over your own eyes and accept Bob into your mind? Repent! Quit your job, slack off, and praise Bob!
Church of the Subgenius, eternal salvation, or triple your money back.
So that was the interview with Andrew Gable. I hope to God I was able to edit that into a decent sounding show of some kind or another.
It's shite. Shite.
Oh, that was probably
a train wreck.
You're like sending me text messages and type, can't hear you. And I'm like, I can't hear you. Okay, you're back. No, you're not back. Are you fighting with your microphone?
dude, it was a total Irmagod moment.
People don't realize what sometimes happens in the background of our interviews that we do on this show. And 95% of the time, we're able to pull off a decent interview without too crazy of things going on. This was a juggling act with chainsaws and flaming torches going on.
We need to vlog this shit, I think.
I don't know if Andrew caught on to the craziness that was going on behind the scenes, because we're trying as hard as we can to try to like be like, okay, let's just keep the interview going and ignore this powerful drug. Keep going.
Dude, I'm thinking to myself, dude, we got to hold this. We got to keep this thing together. It's got to hold together.
I think we should cut the interview short. And you're like, no, we must keep going. We must carry on. I'm like, dude, we're dying here. We're dying on the vine.
it was brutal. It was brutal, man.
So
I feel so bad for Andrew.
Oh my God, Andrew, if you hear this, I'm so sorry. But you had no idea what were going on in the background here. It's like the steering wheel completely came off of
the bus.
Dude,
no, we were steering the car with a pair of channel locks.
Anyways, big thanks to Chris C for becoming a Patreon member this week. I'm going to try to record an episode this week to get another one up in the Patreon feed. We're pretty much booked for the rest of the month of October. Did I already mention what we're doing for the Halloween show? I don't know if I did.
You gave hints.
What this year's
Halloween
show?
I'm going to be going out of town one of those weekends, man.
So we need to nail that down. We've got Ben Redford returning to the show here very soon.
Hello.
Hey, Ben's going to come. Ben isn't really affected by the curse. I know Ben will be here. Come hell or high water, Redford will be back on the show again. Yep. I know there's people out there, why are you getting him on the show? Skeptical community issues, blah, blah, blah. Ben's not coming on the show to talk about anything paranormal. Ben came out with a book called Bad Clowns.
Good stuff, man. It's a good book.
And the thing is with all this crazy clown happenings right now that are going on down south, which I think a vast majority of them are just hysteria or people jumping on the bandwagon. I figured it would be a great time to have Ben come back on here and talk about his book. If you don't like Ben, cool. I get it. I understand completely. But we've never had Ben on here to talk about paranormal and skepticism or anything like that. Every time we've had Ben on here, it's to talk about strange history or just weird events that have happened. We don't really cover skepticism with him. And he's probably one of the few skeptics that I'll actually talk to. Moving along, though. I understand you guys want me to play more Black Sabbath on the show. I get it. I cannot close out every episode with a Black Sabbath song. So,
well, you know,
that was
can't or won't.
It's a little bit of both. And don't get me wrong. I do love Black Sabbath. And on that note, Brown Sabbath has a new CD coming out, apparently.
That's wonderful.
Do you remember who Brown Sabbath is?
Yes.
Brown Sabbath is the wonderful. is the Latin horn band that that plays Black Sabbath songs.
Yeah.
And they're great. They're awesome. I've used them in the show before.
Yep.
I've used a lot of bands in the show before.
Yeah, you have.
So anyways, that's about everything that I can think of. And because of the crazy shenanigans that have happened in this show, I am drinking a little bit of whiskey right now. As you can hear
you
my glass clinking around. And I'm going to cut it off because pretty soon I'm going to get to a point where I can't speak coherently.
I'm drunk.
I will be getting there. Well, yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, this is been Project Archivist. This is Rogan from Detroit. Peace out.
This is Lobo from Connecticut. This is howdy. I hope everything's going well for Sammy Two Spins out in Colorado. They made it there safely.
One of our listeners moved out there.
Yep, he's out there with his girl, and he's starting a new life out there. I lost a really good friend.
Oh, you didn't?
You know. He's moved 2,000 miles away, man.
Yeah, but still. That's a
long way away.
Now you've got an excuse to travel out to Colorado with the family. You can go to Yellowstone Park.
I'm not going with the family, dude. I already made arrangements with him. He's got one spare bedroom, dude. I'm running away.
Dude, okay, you'll go out to Colorado without the family, but you won't, like, go down to Texas or L.A. with me or anything like that? Huh? Or Mothman?
That's a last-ditch effort, dude.
Yeah.
Going to a meetup is a little different than running away from your family.
Uh-huh. You know what's going to happen because Colorado's got legalized marijuana? You're going to relapse out there. You're going to get
fuck you. Don't say that shit. What's wrong with your brains?
No, I think if you'd have done that, you'd have done it by now. What's wrong with your brains? Oh, God.
What's your brain?
What's wrong with your brains? All right, folks. This has been Rogan. Peace out.
Yo, peace.
You wired me awake and hit me with a hand of broken nail. You tied my lead and pulled my chain to watch my blood begin to boil. But I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. Too cold to start a fire, I'm burning diesel, burning dinosaur bones. I'll take the river down to still water and ride a pack of dogs. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. When the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes in my headlights. When the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break, I'm gonna break my, gonna break my rusty cage.